State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy joining us for the first September edition of Tacky Talk. How are you, Tacky?
Hey Joe, good to see you and everybody that's listening and watching in September. As we're coming up on this weekend, I wish everybody a happy Labor Day weekend. I'll do that early here and also celebrate the hard work of unions that actually created a lot of the legal rights all workers enjoy today, ranging from minimum wage to lower hours and helping on things like ending child labor or more accurately, making sure people aren't exploited. While Labor Day is coming up, we remind folks that it is called Labor Day for a reason, not barbecue weekend. And of course, we talked about this already last time. Get out early as well. I won't be here for September 11th's 25th anniversary. I hope it's a good opportunity for us to reflect and remind us that freedom isn't free. People out there defending our freedoms and making incredible sacrifices, including folks that are civilians, not just military and law enforcement and public safety. It's sometimes bravery of individuals can make a big difference as well. But also a chance to share stories. Sometimes they really do hurt, but sharing a story is how helps some of that pain go away as well. I shared some stories as well. I've been talking to other folks and talk to a guy to actually watch the buildings come down. Actually, I won't tell where it was, but we had a little chat and reminiscing. And he was in New York, and he lost one of his buddies in the World Trade Center. So everybody's got a story to tell that day. So again, celebration of labor, well, unions and labor, but also a stark reminder coming up to one of the worst tragedies we've ever seen.
Yes, here in Quincy for Labor Day, actually, there's going to be fireworks over Quincy Bay on Sunday night about 8 p.m. So you can watch those, right from Wollaston Beach or any neighborhood facing Quincy Bay. And then for 9/11, outside of the fire department headquarters on Quincy Avenue, there'll be a memorial ceremony at 9:30 that morning.
Yeah, I regret I cannot be there. The fire department in the city does a great job on remembrance every year. I just won't be around that day, unfortunately. So I send my regrets now, I'll be sure my office is represented.
Oh, of course, yeah, and we'll carry it here on QATV, not live, but soon afterwards, folks can watch it here as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we are chatting the day after the state primary election, Tacky, and I know being a political junkie, you were watching the numbers closely.
I'm not going to lie. I am a political junkie addict on elections long before I got elected. Since it was a primary and only focused on Massachusetts, I really didn't delve deep into other primaries this past summer. You guys know I've been preoccupied. Even then, I was a little too preoccupied to do a full analysis because I would break down races going into primaries. And I've been a little too distracted to do that. But certain races kind of went the way we thought it would. Some were tougher than we thought it would be. And some of them, were in defense on the, I call it a knife's edge, could have gone either direction. And, we do have some results. So which one do you want to talk about first?
Well, we should start, I guess, with the one that was generated a lot of interest here in Norfolk County for the district attorney seat.
Congratulations to, the DA, now incoming DA Perkins, is what the numbers show. It was a huge field, as you guys have seen, and a big field. Almost anything can happen. I think certain things were beneficial. I think Candidate Deitch has the Quincy address, even though he only been living here for less than 9 months, does carry weight still. I think that is still a big factor. Greg Connor came in second. Came in wicked late in the race, really kind of behind on name recognition and money. I won't say it was a strong second, but came in second. It shows there's still some benefits on a big field of an Irish name and support from the local delegations and others locally here.
He was third, actually. He was behind
He came
Perkins
back.
and
Oh,
Deitch.
did. Okay, I
Yeah.
didn't. I see. I only got the pre. I'm sorry. I didn't get the. I only got the pre-mail-in numbers.
Right. Yeah. Perkins, right about 29% of the vote. Deitch, I think he pronounces it Deitch. It's 26%. And then Connor was back at 15%.
All right, so I am wrong because I only saw the QATV numbers last night.
That those are only Quincy numbers. Yes.
Yeah, and I also didn't get the full mail-in ballot numbers. So that's one of the trouble, and it's not a big trouble, but it's on the data. You have to wait a little longer to next morning to wait for the mail-in ballots, and the absentee ballots are still coming in.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah.
especially with like countywide races, we only get the Quincy results.
Exactly. So the Quincy results, if I'm still correct, should be Deitch, Connor, Lee.
Correct.
Yeah. On that group, I would tell you Macy Lee was the surprise.
Yeah.
She came another one that came in super late, under-resourced, into Quincy, with almost no organization capacity, even though she had quite a bit of lawn signs up, and I kind of can guess who was helping who in those lawn signs. But I think it's going to bear some more reveal if you're a candidate in Quincy on that, particularly on her numbers. Myself, Nina Liang, Susan Yun, Tom Leung. Now you have Macy Lee. I know not all of those are Democrat Republican situations and municipal races, but the last name, having a Chinese last name, does matter. And in senior housing in particular, and a younger Democratic voting base appearing, that is most likely Asian, voting for these candidates. And we saw this with Christopher Chan in Ward 6, had a pretty strong showing under resource as well. There is a change in the voting demographic, and you guys may be thinking I'm over thinking this or overblowing this, but this when you do look at voter data over many years, everything's subtle. Dramatic shifts is not common. It's all subtle shifts, and is monitoring these little subtle shifts on voting demographic is what's fascinating, in showing you how candidates moving forward needs to change how they campaign or message to the ever so subtle shifting of the voter base. And
Right, yeah.
Macy is the one to watch in terms of the data sets.
Yeah, it must be. Is it encouraging though to see Asian Americans at least participating in the process? I know that was a criticism years ago, was that, oh, the Asians don't vote.
Well, as I say, in the past, my younger days, you had a lot of factors going on, right? Citizenship was not easy to get
Right.
post-9/11. You have folks that were on green cards for an extended period as opposed to full citizenship. You do have folks that are not attuned to democratic processes coming from countries that are not. But at the same time, though, you have a whole new generation of kids growing up in the city.
Right.
Who are part of Quincy schools and grow up, with more knowledge about surroundings, engaging more of the public, and most importantly, recognizing how the city does or does not work for them. And that is part of the change. And this is also the case. We talk about the other races too, regarding Democrats and Republicans, by the way. I have friends everywhere. It's not just limited to one group, as much as people like to think we're siloed in. I don't talk to anybody. It's interesting conversation in different parts of the state, and
Yeah.
now have friends out of state that are elected about the changing, shifting demographics, not just age, but people moving in, people moving out, people changing, priority shifting. It's a constant evolution. And while I can't peer into every personal individual, what's going on, these general data sets will give us some clues about where the things are shifting around in the voters. And we already know that unenrolled voters is the highest number out there. Republicans and Democrats have been shifting down, both parties,
Yes.
regarding registration, which is also an indication of change.
Yes.
But historically, not always, but more often than not, unenrolled voters in Quincy tend to lean Democrat, not always, tend to do so. And a lot of both unenrolleds in both parties, I'm sorry, both groups will take a ballot in one of the parties because the state doesn't have you automatically registered. And
Right.
some folks that may not be a Democrat anymore may continue to vote in a Democratic primary. Some people may not be a Republican anymore. may also reward a Republican primary. So I mean,
Right.
I think people, hang up too much, in fact, on the labels and the silos and stereotypes, but not really kind of looking at the shifting pattern of voter behavior. Right? Of that DA's race, I personally think that Macy Lee, not because she's Asian, but because I think that an under-resourced candidate was able to pull a pretty good number under very late appearance.
Says a lot. Yeah, it says a lot for sure. And speaking of shifting trends, I mean, people might be surprised to learn that many, many years ago, well, not that many years ago, in the 40s and 50s, Quincy was largely Republican.
Yes, I've had the pleasure of talking to people like Rosemary or Archie Wahlberg. I talked to John Gillis in the past, and I had the pleasure of talking to Frank Bellotti, and a lot of other campaign workers, not just electeds from that generation, and how the Republican Party was predominantly broadest Protestants. They were multi-generational here. They were anti-immigration. They were anti-Catholic. They're anti poor regions. They hated Eastern Europeans in particular. And it wasn't welcoming to these newcomers. And the Democratic Party was the opposing party to the dominant Republican base. And it was logical. If you want to get to political headway, and they won't take you into one party, you go to the other.
Yeah, it was really kind of the Kennedy era that things started to change.
It was also decades movement. Candidates were running over and over again. We all know Frank Bellotti didn't win a municipal race, but became OG and AG. You have a lot of folks that may not love each other, but they have the common cause of taking down the other party's candidate or the incumbent, and then proceed to deal with the what happens next after you win. Which is a whole different conversation of
That's right.
personalities, as I like to say.
Yes. But yeah, it does it, as you say, but it takes decades, for trends to change.
That's absolutely correct. And that also reflects a lot of the change inside parties as well. Things do shift around. People who think that this stays static forever is not right. It will always evolve and change as people change. And and that's just how life works. And I've been watching this stuff for a very long time, and I'm sure some other listeners as well. But I think you still have to go in with an open mind and an understanding of change, and that's what we're looking for.
Let's talk about the other local race of interest for the 8th Congressional District.
Yeah, this is one of the more nastier campaigns we've seen in a while. I don't know if people have gotten the mailers, and it's the first time I've seen a super PAC really get involved in an essentially local-ish race with Congressman Lynch and Patrick Roth. And yeah, they were really nasty. I've never seen it. And I watch the Channel 5 News. Everyone knows this. Watch all the advertising. Love the New Hampshire ones because I don't understand what's happening in New Hampshire ones. But also now we have social media, and I do watch YouTube. YouTube is my preference of choice for getting non-domestic news. I get my overseas news from YouTube. And the volume of advertising, particularly for that super PAC, was obnoxious. Like every single thing. I mean, if I want to watch about the Nepalese tragedy of the landslide, first thing I see is how Ed Markey is terrible. And I'm sorry, Ed Markey is okay, but old, and we should get rid of him, I think. Was the simple messaging. Same thing. I watched I wanted to watch like Penguins. No,
Instead,
another ad. It became truly obnoxious, and I think that messaging didn't work. I mean, Lynch and Markey were facing ageism, anti-ageism campaigns, and as generally, in Democratic primaries, on a policy matter at the federal level, particularly, they tend to be similar policy issues, maybe 95 to 99% similar. And then you have to run on something else. Generally, it's personality. Generally, it's you upset a lot of people on something in that 95 to 9, that 4 to 5% range,
Right,
which
yep.
is a critical mass that becomes a problem for the incumbent. Or you have an incumbent that just basically fell asleep at the switch.
Yeah.
But that's not the case here. Both Ed Markey and Stephen Lynch, were not asleep at the switch, and they've been actively campaigning. And like myself, the congressman is on 2-year terms, and 2-year terms mean that you're always campaigning.
That's right. Yep. Pretty much, yeah.
And it's a big geography. About one ninth of the state, that's over 600,000 people. That's a big geographic zone of voters. And I give a lot of credit to Steve Lynch. I was telling this other folks, his YouTube ads were good. They were under 20 seconds. They kept to the whole how much time we can actually pay attention.
Yep.
And he reinforced his credentials against the presidential administration, Donald
Yes.
Trump administration, and he tried to keep that messaging out there. That is a senior member of Congress, he did was instrumental on helping on the impeachment of Donald Trump and other things that Democrats want to hear, and also reinforcing that the Republicans hate him. And the fact that he's trying to be labeled as part of the MAGA Republican groups was actually pretty fascinating. And also a dredging of votes from like 2003
Right.
that they had no context of which. Lynch, to his credit, punched back on open stuff. I mean, he went after the candidates right after Roe Raft's employment and the nature of HOAG. And if you read the Globe article, they had a shift, even though they endorsed Roth. They had an article about how the HOAGs are out there trying to influence political races through super PACs nationally. That was actually pretty interesting how after they endorsed that guy, they went after the
Yeah.
guy.
Well, I think probably the editorial board's different from, the reporting.
Actually, I think I we need to talk about that at a future date about
Okay.
editorial boards and publishers. I'm not sure how this works anymore. I
Yeah.
was brought up in a different
Typically
time.
that's how it was. Editorial would be completely separate.
We could talk more about that. I'm still unclear how this works anymore.
Yeah.
I was brought up in the era where editorial boards actually voted in secret about who they were going to endorse back in the day.
That's right. Yes.
But the things have changed how that works. I think the public needs to learn more about how this works, because I'm still surprised about how this isn't voted. Excuse me, in the Boston Globe. So, but I give Lynch a lot of credit. He just didn't, lay down and say, go ahead and punch me. He punched back, and I give him a lot of credit. His ads were good.
Yeah,
He
and
brought up.
he didn't go negative with regards at least to the age. He didn't go that route.
Well, I think him. He's in pretty good shape,
Yeah.
physically, and I saw Ed Markey on a campaign stop last Thursday in Quincy. And physically, they're in good shape. And I think all of us understand aging has issues such as hearing aids. My mom went through this. There's a fight about getting her hearing aids. I think people who have parents who are aging understand the fist fight about hearing aids. But I mean, there's certain things that are natural, and it's going to start occurring as you get close to age 70.
Right.
Let's be frank about it. And Steve was an iron worker. Congressman was on the rafters. He was around a lot of noise.
Oh yeah,
And
absolutely. Yeah.
that catches up with you as you hit the age over 60, about all the volume of noise. It starts in your 50s, I hear, but really starts to be apparent when you get over 60,
Yeah.
about all that noise. And that's kind of one of the occupational hazards, right?
Oh yeah, just a lot of the granite worker industry people had big issues with hearing because of that.
Exactly. And that's not necessarily just an age issue, that's an occupational issue.
That's right. Yep.
So, but I mean, he went after the fact that, look who's endorsing Roe Raft, the Hogue article on the Globe, as well as his attacks are strictly based on a professional level. Didn't go after stage and things like that. He really stuck at, his day job, and that doesn't compatible. On the flip side, you have an interesting thing about Markey, where he had to make Sepp prove that he couldn't do the job. And the problem is that Moulton, and I've seen this before, and I won't name names, which I find troublesome, never ran on his record. He never once really talked about being a city congressman and all the accomplishments he could take from Congress to the U.S. Senate. He was running as if he's a first-time candidate. And it's hard to use the word Congressman Moulton and then say and then run ads as if, you just came out of nowhere to run against this. And I've seen this before on municipal races, not Quincy uniquely, but also other places, as well as races for state rep and state senators, or councilors or select board members trying to bump up the state senators, state reps. It's actually pretty fascinating to watch, particularly someone as high profile as Moulton, because he's been on all the news channels nationally. He's been campaigning for candidates outside the state. He made a run for Speaker of the House against Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, he ran for president.
He ran for president for half a blink. And it's his he really tried to show himself as a brand new candidate, as opposed to talking about what he has done that would give you strength going in saying that you're effective, not just change the guy because they're ineffective because he does have a record. And is that a reflection of a candidate running from a record? Like, what is your record, right? And I think there was a tough haul there.
Yeah, and of course now he's lost his seat in Congress too. That was an interesting race to replace him.
Yeah, there's another huge race. I think it was what, six for DA here, five for the congressional seat.
That sounds right, yeah.
Dan Cole was the presumptive favorite in that.
Yep.
He had the most money. He had the most endorsements. I really question about certain endorsements I probably wouldn't have taken, given not convinced they're that appealing. But regardless, he locked in the unions early. He had the support of Marty Walsh. He's the establishment candidate, by far none. But another one to try to, he is a kid that's privileged, trying to show he's not. I give Betcham some credit. He came in third, but he is a guy that worked himself into privilege, so to speak. He became successful and has money. And he had great ads. Unfortunately, he had no ground game.
Well, he really played on his name, yeah.
Yeah, I give him credit. I remember him.
Yeah, it was
Watching
creative.
him.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotta give him credit for that. My friend Dirk Trom Nguyen came in second. And she was outspent easily, probably 10 to 1
Yeah,
this
yeah.
stage. She's a sitting rep, but coming at the same location as Dan Coe. And it's tough because you're coming in from a district that was once in Lori Trahan's district,
That's right.
moved into this district, and trying to get traction on the on coming that side. And it was going to be a tall haul. Dan also becomes the first Lebanese Korean elected from Massachusetts in a federal office. So technically both locations, I believe, are considered part of Asia. So he is the first Asian person to win a federal seat
Interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah.
in this state.
Okay.
Oh, it was a very confusing somewhat messaging on that front. So we'll see how it plays out. I mean, one of the challenges of Asian American candidates and other people of color is that when you win a seat, there's some expectation that you have to respond to those concerns. So we'll see how that plays out. And also,
Okay.
he's outside my geographic zone, so it's not like I really know the guy.
Yeah, right. No, I understand. Yeah. It's
As I like to
interesting.
say, I stay in my lane as often as I can.
That's
I do leave the city to visit places now.
right.
I don't have the strongest relationships once I leave my geographic zone. But
Yeah.
that was a race I think was a foregone conclusion. It's also an interesting race where every candidate tried to be the front runner in promoting themselves. Like, I'm already the front runner, come with me.
Right. Follow the leader, basically, right? Yeah.
We talked about this last time too.
Yeah.
And towards the last couple of weeks, they stopped that and really tried to promote different imaging. And I do notice follow the leader in the sense of advertising. For example, I saw Betcham do ads more on the family style type stuff,
Yep.
focusing on gas and the cost of food and that stuff. And next thing you know, I'm seeing ads from Moulton and Cole following that same line. And then you see
Right.
the ad of Moulton in the family setting at dinner. And next thing you know, I see a Dan Coe ad following that same one. So either they're using the same consultants,
Which is possible, yeah.
which is possible. And that's a little bit of inside baseball, folks. If you see ads are most incredibly similar, there's only two things happening. One, they're sharing the same consultant team.
Right. Yes.
Or second, they see one ad and decide that that's something they should steal for their advertising.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We're going to see it with, I mean, a lot of the ballot question folks are supported by a lot of the same organizations for several different questions. So we're going to see that too.
Yeah, you're going to see that as well. So if you ever notice and you hit scratch your head, how come these look like the same ads? That's the
They
explanation.
basically are just fill in
Maybe,
the
yeah, it's the same people running the consulting
blank.
teams for those folks.
That's right.
The lack of imagination, I suppose. And also shows how much control candidates at a certain level have over their campaigns.
Yeah, that's
I
true too.
still truly believe that as a candidate, your name's on the ballot, it's your reputation, you should have final decision on everything.
No, for sure. Yeah.
Because there is life after this gig,
That's
and
right.
I would like to have at least respectable name. And you may not like me, but at least respectable when I leave this job. But even if you're running for office, you would like to leave being respected, minimum. You should have a lot of say in how those campaigns unfold to ensure that you maintain your good name no matter what happens in the final result.
So now Markey will face John Deaton, the Republican, who we've seen before as well.
Yeah, I don't see a whole lot of change here from Deacon taking on Elizabeth Warren to here. I say this again, I've said this multiple times. I do believe there's going to be some interesting voting in the fall. Going to November about folks being just upset. And I'm not sure which way it's going to go. It's going to affect me too. Let's not be foolish here, where the current economic situation is not pleasant. We've talked many times how we're both challenged about today's economy. I'm sure you guys listening as well, and you basically take it out of the ballot box. On the other side of it is that the Trump administration is so unfavorable. There is a down ticket impact, even though he's not on the ticket.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for
It'd
sure.
be very interesting how this
Yeah.
plays out because it is still Massachusetts. It is predominantly Democratic voting base. However, people, regardless of political party or affiliation, will register some level of protest vote. And whether it be voting for the other party, not voting at all, or still
Yep.
voting for your own party because you hate the other party so
Right,
much. I'm not sure how this is going to play out. And I still believe voters aren't dumb. Voters are very smart in understanding that the people in power are the ones being held responsible.
right. Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about the speaking of Republicans, the Republican primary for governor. That was kind of a bare-fisted fight too between Brian Shortsleeve and Mike Minogue.
Minogue ran a lot more ads. Shortsleeve ran the populist position, the ads. Minogue ran I can get things done
Right.
position. Both of them ignored each other and went straight after Maura Healey, which I thought was kind of interesting. Generally, in the primary, you have an opponent. You're supposed to
Right.
take out that opponent first
Right.
before
Right.
you move on to the next opponent. But neither one actually talked to each other in commercials I've seen. It's not like I'm the better Republican. I hate Maura Healey. He's the reason why.
Right.
And I can do a better job why. The short sleeve did run against the legislature. No, did not. You may have seen news articles and other social media posts about short sleeve taking on the legislature on different issues, some of which are not factually correct, but irrelevant. He's trying to get traction in the Republican Party. And not surprising when no, basically crushed him in this primary, but it was not overwhelming. And it also shows that Brian Shortsleeve does have a following in the Republican Party, and it's still there. And he's a longtime political activist in that party, unlike Minogue, who just basically showed up with $6 million and decided to run for governor. Brian Shortsleeve is more your long time, been involved, mobile campaign Republican that worked at it for a long time. So you got this interesting dichotomy there of a brand new Republican challenger with a lot of money versus, I wouldn't use the word traditional, but someone that put in a lot of time and effort into the party, regardless of the governor, regardless of the candidates, regardless of how the state committee has evolved.
Right.
in the case financially, problematically devolved on the finances. But Brian Shoresleeve, is one of those guys that has been around and active for a long time, and it's actually a pretty interesting race there, and how someone with a lot of money shows up and basically some ways buy a race against someone that's been around a long time. And I'm not promoting either one. I'm just stating kind of
Oh,
the
no, I understand. Yeah.
of how
So,
it works. I mean, you
yeah,
saw
being.
this in other ways too. We've seen this in Democratic Party, seen this with like Mitt Romney taking out Jane Swift in the Kristi Miles polling, secret polling that showed that it was going to be Jane, and he started putting money in, and Jane decided she had to get out. Deval Patrick took 2 years campaigning, took out a longtime establishment Democrat from Middlesex, which was Tom Riley. You've seen this behavior before in both parties, where you have some folks that are been around a long time. You can question the level of effort and things like that, but you have these brand new folks come straight into the party and with no prior commitment, nor supporting other folks, nor actively engaged in your community, and just went
Right.
nuts.
Right. Yeah. And it also tells me the state Republican Party doesn't have like a moderate candidate like a Charlie Baker to put up right now.
They don't. And state committee, Republican state committee, still carrying a lot of unpaid bills and debt caused by its previous chair. And this is a serious problem, because it's hard to donate anyone to donate to the fact that you didn't pay your bills. It
Right.
doesn't create confidence in donors. And some of them may have noticed that the Republican Republican convention was very peculiar, because basically major donations was made to the party in addressing the nominee. And also the vice I'm sorry, the lieutenant governor of that endorsement process didn't get enough signatures to get on the ballot. It had to do a write-in campaign.
No, I didn't know that.
So the LG candidate for governor, lieutenant governor, was endorsed by the Republican State Committee, won the nomination, but didn't get enough signatures.
Oh, okay.
So the individual needed 10,000 signatures, write-in, to make it onto the ballot, which I presume is doable.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
And I don't know what happens if you don't have an LG
I was
candidate.
just going to ask the same thing. Okay. What do you do? Just pick somebody?
Trivia question for Secretary Gallant.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's a good idea.
No idea what happened, but I've not seen a news report. I've not gotten to that part of my looking around, but I would presume that in a statewide scenario, there'll be sufficient Republican base to write in the lieutenant governor candidate.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Huh. Okay. So those are the really local races of interest. Anything else you're watching?
I will obviously watch legislative races, right? There were some fascinating races, particularly Michelle Wu taking on the legislature, specifically state senators. So you had Landers versus Brownsburg. Brownsburg is the incumbent. That it looks like a squeaker, about 60 votes. That's heading for a recount. Landers is a Michelle Wu candidate. Boston mayors have involved themselves in legislative races before. This is not a new thing. And Michelle Wu was basically following the same pattern as many Boston mayors in the past, how they behave. Mike Rush looks like he may have lost that race versus Yu. Doris Yu, if she wins, will be the third Asian senator, the most we've ever seen. And the suburbs won. He won the suburbs, but we're talking about towns like Westwood, not big communities. And the base is still Boston. And it appears that Mike Rush could not carry Boston. And a lot of us thought that he would carry his traditional bases, particularly the Irish sections of Boston, to win that out and just win the suburbs, and even lose Boston a little bit, to carry it out. But I don't think that's what's happened so far. So that would be a Michelle win, and also losing a Senate leadership person, which is a big deal, by the way. So both Brownsburger and Rush are in Senate leadership. So we'll see how that works. One of my caucus members, Erica Eidelhoven, who's Japanese, won her state Senate race coming out of Summit, replacing Pat Gelin. Again, I've been a little tuned out regarding watching other people's races. And that was a five-person race, three out of Somerville in particular. And Christine Barber, who's the other state rep from Somerville, couldn't get enough votes to overcome Idahoans' lead, even though Christine Barber won Winchester and Medford. And the Cambridge numbers were coming in late, so I don't know exactly what happened in Cambridge. But still, your base, your shit, you split your base. Some of the smaller communities didn't have enough raw numbers to overcome splitting the base. And here's another demonstration of a so-called democratic socialist. Again, these are not socialists, my understanding from poli-sci classes, but taking on a more of establishment liberal, so to speak, because Christine Barber is a liberal. In a liberal community, which is Somerville was very liberal, by the way. And you had three other candidates involved who are writing more moderately. And what do you do, right? You know that one of the liberal candidates has a locked-in base. Erica had a race the year before, 2 years before. So she knows what her base looks like. And then you got to make some hard decisions about, are you going to try to hang on to your party liberal base and try to find more moderates and upset your liberal base, or you try to hang on to your liberal base and try to find new liberals or liberal or other ideologically leaning folks in your section of the Democratic primary, or go trying to get more moderates because you're afraid of losing what base you have and then try to steal. It is a mathematical horror show in that scenario when the other one is not interested in growing the base and is just locking down.
And it impacts voter turnout too, as well. If there's not a contested race, people aren't going to come out.
Yeah, and some people also had an open seat because both state senators left, which I'm saying both state reps left. Some of them should get people running in that downhill race, which also drives up those numbers. Plus, you got the Markey race as well, driving up numbers. In the case of Cambridge, even though there wasn't a direct overlap with the Senate seat, you had the Marjorie Decker and Michael Connelly from Cambridge having primary candidates. Michael Connelly won handily, and it appears that so did Marjorie Decker. We did have some mail-in late voting, absentee voting ballots 2 years ago that showed that Marjorie Decker lost, and then she won on the mail-in slash absentee slash early voting ballots. So it looks like, based on the Globe numbers, Boston Globe numbers, that Marjorie Decker won handily, but also drives up those counts in those decided areas. In that, I'm sorry, in those city areas that could affect the Senate seat as well in that race. So you got some a lot of down ticket action through in that part of the area, and you also have the up ticket action of Markey pulling out votes. So you're right about voter turnout. There's a lot of things happening in that geographic zone. And again, there's another lesson for us in politics and those political junkies about number of candidates matter, the demographics of your base matter. What does your base look like? What at a political party spectrum is that base? Let's ignore your political politics, my political politics. This is an analysis situation about what does that base look like, and the impacts of thing races above you, impacts of races below you.
I'd be curious to see the I think the turnout in November will be much higher given 9 ballot questions also.
Well, ballot questions don't always draw people out. So just curious. Also, just one other note is money. Erica Idahoan was underfunded, underendorsed. So again, endorsements don't always win races, and money does not always matter. It does, but not always. So, and you're right, ballot questions, I don't know. It depends, right? It depends on how much interest is generated on ballot questions. My gut instincts always, if voters don't understand something, they'll vote no. Catchy campaign slogans does make them a yes if it's simple to understand. And it's a lot of reading, and we talk about the fact you got basically a textbook coming in the red book from the Secretary.
Yes, I can't wait.
Can't wait to see what that printing cost looks like. We could download PDF and stare at your screen for a long time as to become a well-educated voter about these ballot questions. And it's going to be a lot of work. And again, we already talked about that. We'll do some shows going into late September, October, focusing on ballot questions and try to give you a balanced approach to what we think is trying to be accomplished here.
Yes.
And
As soon as we understand them somewhat.
somewhat, and
Yeah.
I like to talk about unintended consequences too,
Right.
that I think may arise from voting yes or no. So those are the big Democratic primary races. We were focusing on one. Actually, another good primary race that I was looking at was North Adams, John Barrett.
Oh, really?
John Barrett was a mayor for over 30 years, became a state rep. As you can tell, he's not young. He only won about 160 votes.
Wow.
It was a pretty tight race for a guy that's been in elected office in some format for a better part of 40 plus years.
Very interesting.
Another one I was watching was Tara Hung versus Sakari Chow. Sakari Chow lost registered deeds race, a city councilor. Tara Hung is a first-time candidate, beat the incumbent Roddy Mum 2 years ago. It looks like Tara won handily through a 66% 2.5, 2 plus 2, over 2 to 1 margin. So he secured his seat against a longtime counselor who also is Cambodian and also ran 2 years before. So I wasn't clear how that was going to play out. Another seat I was watching was down in Cava, a Republican primary regarding Gaskin and Townsend. There was a lot of disgruntlement in the Republican base over there, and Gaskin actually won pretty handily in that area, in the small towns particularly. But it is a split vote, and there's split communities over there regarding the candidates. So, I don't think that saga is over, but that was actually an interesting watch from up here, looking at three little towns and how that plays out. Some other ones people thought would be much more closer turned out not to be. My good friend Mary Keefe from Worcester won handily. Jim O'Day, another friend, won handily in the same geographic region. And then, not too many other races in the primaries, and both Democrats and Republicans were wicked close in terms of
Right.
incumbents.
Yeah. Interesting. I give it a lot of credit to, candidates who try, because it's a lot of work.
Oh, again, I always congratulate all candidates.
Yeah.
You put your name out there, today's political environment and how people behave in social media, but also sometimes in person, is not exactly what I call most civil. I've myself have found myself greatly more disenchanted by people's behavior, and feel that if you're behind a screen, you can say whatever you want and there's no consequences. I've always enjoyed conversations, even if I'm not with you or on something. I at least enjoy listening to a point of view and a polite conversation to see what they're saying. And some stuff I have no idea what's going on either. And I learn from these conversations as opposed to, an email or just a social media blast. It doesn't really create an education opportunity for me.
I was
And
just going to say the same thing. It's that's how you learn, right? About things is by hearing opposing views.
that's right. And I think some people is always very surprised when I say it's an educational opportunity because that's how I view it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's and likewise from their point of view as well.
Sometimes. Depends on
But
who's talking to you.
you hope.
You hope. Again, I'm not here to change people's minds. I think that's one of the interesting things in my 30 years of watching all this stuff.
Yeah.
There's always this weird expectation of voters like, well, change my mind. I'm like, no, you already decided. I mean, let's talk about your issue and let me learn about what's going on.
Yeah.
It's generally the mantra is to change the elected's mind
Yeah,
by educating them on what you're thinking. And then nowadays we can do our own homework. And I always find that an interesting conversation. And again, I said this before back in August that I actually, when I talk to folks, people always want to talk about what I want. I'm like, what do you want? And it always catches particularly younger voters off guard when I say the words, well, tell me what you want.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about
They're
things.
ready for a fight, and you just like cut the wind right out of their sails.
Well, it's more I'm interested in what you're thinking more than what you
Yeah.
should be interested in what I'm thinking. Because you don't work for me.
So the other way around.
It's
Yeah.
the other way
That's
around.
right.
That's why I
Yep.
found it kind of bizarre. And I think new electeds who adopt this point of view that voters work for you, we have a problem.
Right.
Because that's not how this works. It's a bottom-up democracy. The bottom is the voters who vote for people up above them. Will vote people into office, right?
Right, to represent them. It's represent it's right in your name, your state representative.
Yeah, and I think this is a point of view that I don't know everybody shares. I guess I was brought up different in
Yeah.
politics than everyone else because this is the way I was brought up in this gig. And yeah, not always going to agree with you. That's okay. And I don't have a problem with it. And I hope, well, maybe they do have a problem with it, but I personally don't have a problem with it. And personally speaking, I mean, as long as you're not mean and nasty and you go after people's families and stuff like that, that's fine. I mean, just don't do that kind of stuff and just be polite and professional and treat other people as you like to be treated.
So now that the election's over, will the State House start to get active again?
The state house is doing public hearing postings right now. They start in late August. Our internal email system does show that various committees are trying to do some late file bills. My committee gets a lot of home rule petitions, and we get more as we hit town meetings in October, where they vote to have over quota licensing. Certain committees like municipalities, public service, will get home rule petitions as we go along during the year. Cities obviously can vote on home rule petitions anytime in the city format. You have the city council and the mayor, executive and legislative branches have to approve. In the case of town meeting, you just need town meeting's approval. Selectmen can put a warrant on, which then is a vote of selectmen, which puts it on them. But there is a kind of a quirky thing about town meetings, and a lot of them happen in the fall time, in the springtime, in the fall time. So municipalities will get charter changes and similar things about open meeting laws. Public service will get committees regarding benefit changes, especially retirement, and to allow sometimes law enforcement to exceed age 65, depending on the situation on contract. And obviously, I get a lot of over quota requests for alcohol licensing going into the fall. So I'll still be busy. It is not exciting work, as you can hear. It's like, it's changing the world, but in someone's world, someplace, it does matter. And we are doing a due diligence. We just don't rubber stamp stuff. We do it in due diligence and ask the right questions as part of our process. And there'll be written testimony for the home petitions, largely because they're the city and town stuff, and it's not like you're going to get somebody from outside that community talking about their bill. And the rep and senator, I always invite them to bring their own local officials in to see me if that's something they would like to do. I'm more than happy to visit with local officials, should a rep or a senator ask for me to do so. And we do communicate with our local senators and reps of those communities to get more information and work with them on getting bills done. So, these little quiet things do not make any newspapers. They just happen to me and Joe. This is all you're going to learn about this stuff because that's where it's coming from. And I love advocacy groups disparage the fact that, home rule petitions are things that we pass. It kind of dismisses local communities' initiatives that are presented to the legislature. And that's regretful because, like I said, it matters to somebody's world, even though it's not yours.
Well, it's, I mean, it really is at the heart of local democracy, right? It's where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, and local government, has a right, to file bills in Massachusetts pursuant to the Constitution, and it's important to them. But when you look at some of the bigger newspapers and some of the media outlets and advocacy groups, they act like, well, it's just a home rule petition. It's not important. Well,
Yeah.
it is. It's important to the folks that voted for this in their community.
That's right. That's right.
And as legislators, we should be very respectful of those votes.
Yeah, it's what they were elected to do, really.
And as a chair, we're very respectful of the fact that these communities put this effort in. It is a process. It's not just like whatever. I mean, it's a process you have to go through. It is and welcome meeting laws and whatnot. So as you can hear from my tone of voice, that there is a disparity of how I approach individuals versus what you hear from advocacy groups and even from the media.
Well, there's a big home rule petition pending here in Quincy. We won't get into right now, but it's a big one.
Not my problem at the moment.
It just goes to show you these things impact people, local neighborhoods.
That's right. And we won't get into it here. It is not in my district. I'll say that much. But it does create strong opinions and it does create a voter turnout and it does create a situation where your state legislature should create some accountability regarding how these things unfold. And the chairs have a responsibility to also take responsibility to understand better what the policy and issues interested that are interesting in the community they're in. So that's what I'll say about that.
Okay. Yep, absolutely. We're going to take a little break here on Tacky Talk.
Yes, I am taking a little break. We've pretty much been together every week, except for my home issues with my mom's passing, where we took a break, but we've actually not really had a break all through 2026. The two of us would like to have some breaks, a little longer than 1 week.
Yes.
And even then, when it's you're all gone, I'm here, and I haven't really taken a week off in about 5, 6 months about. So we're gonna take a little break from each other, and maybe you'll be happy to take a break from us.
It could
The next big event will be Chatterfest, which
Ah.
is in Hell's Neck, and what we know is the Hurley's boat landing.
Oh,
That
yeah.
is dated for the 19th of September. I'm trying to remember what the price is. I think it was always $5, but now they've increased it.
Oh, okay.
That you can come in and taste chowder from the South Shore, as well as from local cooks and
Yes.
restaurants. And it's pretty much like there's no monetary prize for winning, but it is a bragging rights and pride for various folks to win Chowder Fest. And it's a
I
great
think there is a cup. Isn't there a cup?
I think there's a cup,
Yeah.
but it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. It's tasty.
And it's become a regional issue. When I first started
Yes.
scooping chowder as a candidate, it was really just local.
Yeah.
It's become a regional event.
Oh, yeah. There's like 30 different restaurants, I think, or home cooks even.
Yeah, and it attracts thousands upon thousands of people over
Yeah.
about 4 to 5 hour period.
Yeah, it's a great fundraiser for them. Yeah.
And my intention is to scoop chowder for a little while, maybe like an hour, maybe two. Okay, that's not a little while. That day, depending how my schedule works out. Hell's Neck Community Council does a great job on that.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful if they let me participate on
I think
scooping chowder.
you should be enter a recipe one of these years, Jackie.
There'll be no.
Okay.
Getting you, if I get a voter sick on my food,
Ah, okay, we don't do that, no. All
let's not do that.
right.
But also, they get high school kids from Quincy High to participate as well as the
Yeah.
Boy Scouts. So it really is a community event from all age brackets as well. And I believe the Quincy Police Department also has the police boat out there. And they do some rides out to the bay and
Oh, fun.
back. So there's quite a few activities going on. Parking is tough. You end up in Brill Field, which you drive past Hurley's Boat Rental, take the first left before the field, and you end up have people trying to figure out how to put everybody in that field. I've been stuck in there before trying to get out.
That's right. It's a challenge,
I've
yeah.
gone to a lot of these, as you guys can tell.
Yeah, take the bus if you can or walk.
Yeah, as often as I can, if my schedule allows, I will be there. So, but again, that's the 19th. We talked about 9/11 already, their event and the Labor Day fireworks. So there's gonna be some family activities as well as more remembrances going into the month of September.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, in
Yeah.
the month of September, not going. We're here in September already.
That's right. It's here. Yeah, it's things are moving quickly now for sure. Reach out to you, of course.
We are staffed. I keep saying that over and over again because some people don't believe we are. Room 42 at the State House. Please come visit. I know there's a few days left. I encourage everyone to take State House tours. I love the building's history, and people should really appreciate walking through the hallways of Adams and Hancock. 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. Believe it or not, constituent calls up unemployment again. I've received a lot more unemployment issues in the last this week, even though it's only Wednesday, than I expected going into the fall. Tacky.chan@mhouse.gov, tackey.chan@mhouse.gov is the email. We have State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook and corresponding Instagram. We have MALegislature.gov. Always encourage people to form an account there, and you can track things about me. You do have Tacky Chin at ORG. I've been informed we're updating pictures to re represent the current administration we're working with, as opposed
Okay.
to the prior one. It
Oh,
was,
that's good.
yeah, the staff is in the process of like, we should really show which administration we're in now, not the other ones.
That's only been 4 years. Why rush these things?
Yeah, why rush these things? So we're doing a lot of picture updates, folks. And of course, I'm with Joe here, even though we're having a hiatus, almost what 45 times in 1 year, perhaps. And you can email Joe at QATV at QATV.org, QATV at QATV.org, to put in suggestions to Joe about future things you'd like to talk about. And it does not have to be about public policy or politics. If you want to talk about life, food, movies, whatever, Joe will screen them, and we'll change up the format sometimes. So it doesn't hurt to talk about things in life, but that is life, as opposed to just about politics and government.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to hear from folks for sure. Although I'm not so good on movies, I'll have to leave that to your expertise.
Yeah, okay, I'll fully admit I've been watching what I call it, Mental Getaway.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
All right.
not
Well,
too
I'll let you handle
serious.
that. Music
Yeah.
I can talk about. So
Well, again, since people send stuff up, and we could try to work our way through topics.
that's right. All right. Thanks so much, Tacky. Enjoy your break, and we'll catch up with you later this month.
You too.